show today. Our guest, David Marcuselli, you are maybe the only person that's ever messaged and said, I want to be on the podcast. And you said, you used a phrase, do you remember what you said?
Not sure. I just said something along the lines of, you know, I really dig the ethos of your content and, you know, I just vibe with it, man. It's the real deal.
I think you said brothers from another mother.
I might have said that.
I think that's what you said.
Cut from the same cloth.
Cut from the same cloth. I like that. You, and then upon doing my research, aka Colt, doing some research, we realized that we really are. There are a lot of things that we see the same about golf, and you have a definite heel in the golf industry. Can you kind of give the listeners a background on David's life in golf to date?
For sure.
You've got 90 minutes. Go.
No problem. It's a brief history. We'll probably touch 90 seconds. So finished school, was studying hotel management in my undergrad studies, and was working in Aspen, Colorado, just ski bumming it, working in hotels, and was playing golf every day with my buddies. And
hang on. Can we just do Aspen?
Yeah, Aspen.
I love Aspen.
Yeah. Best town on earth, man.
But is it douchey?
No. Okay. The local scene is not.
There's two scenes.
So you got your year rounds, right? And look, there's not a day that passes that I'm not like mentally in Aspen for just a brief time. I mean, if I could be there today, I would. It's just life was kind of passing by and I needed to step out.
Because I've been to Aspen, I think once or twice, and we actually did. I took my ex-girlfriend at the time who was, I had to talk her into it, but we drove from Aspen to Leadville over Hagerman Pass.
Independence Pass,
yeah. Yep. It was scary.
It's unbelievable up there. When my parents came to visit, I knew the GPS would take them over Indy Pass, and I made sure tell them.
Is Independence Pass, I drove a dirt road.
Oh.
I think we did Hagerman Pass, dude.
You did, man.
It was terrifying.
That's gnarly.
No, yeah. And we had a rental car, and I was like, she was like, I think we should turn around. I was like, we got it.
Yeah, dude, no, you went off the grid. That is awesome.
Independence Pass is like anyone can do that.
Anyone can do it. I mean, yeah.
We did Hagerman Pass.
Okay, yeah. I did not send my mom and dad up Hagerman.
It's like off-roading.
Yeah, it totally is. It's like an old logging road.
Yeah. That'd be a fun golf adventure. I'm sure we could figure
out. For sure, man. We'll go dig a couple cups out there, put some flags on the ground, and let it fly.
Is there public golf in Aspen?
Yes. The best public golf deal maybe on the planet. Aspen Municipal Golf Course is unreal. That's where it all started. That's what I was getting to. Aspen Golf Club, when I was there, it's like $800 a year. You'd have unlimited golf in downtown Aspen. I don't have a car, man. I was riding my bike out to the golf scene.
DUI?
No.
That's what I always think.
No. Somehow I don't have a DUI, but, you just don't need one in Aspen. I mean, I had a car, I got there and was like, I don't need this thing. It's just sitting around collecting dust or snow or whatever. Right. So sold it, walked, rode my bike everywhere. And, me and my buddies, I mean, we'd go out to Aspen Golf Club every day. I mean, it's unbelievable. And they pump rounds at that place because it's such a great deal for the locals.
And you're working at a hotel at the time.
What's
your job?
Yeah. At the time, I was a conference manager for a resort at the base of Aspen Mountain.
Okay. So you're wearing a suit?
Not really. I mean, it's
collared shirt.
Wearing a collared shirt, you know, in the summer, khaki shorts. In the winter, khaki pants. It's pretty lax vibe, you know.
And like the Federation of Postmen come and they're like 1,000 people.
Yep.
And you got to make sure that they all have good coffee and stuff.
Yep. Exactly.
Was that a great job or an awful job?
Well, here's the deal. It was a great job because it provided me the resources I needed to have a great time while I was in Aspen, right? When I graduated college 2009, I tried to find work back home in Connecticut, and no one was hiring college kids, right? It was a tough time. So I was like, screw this, I'm going skiing. And
a lot of East Coasters have that, the ski bum dream. I had it.
Yep.
I didn't do it, though.
Yep. So I did it. I mean, I moved out to Aspen. It was going to be a ski season, and then 5 years later, you know, I'm leaving town. But no, it was a cool job. I had a great time, worked with great people. I got a little, I couldn't be authentic in my role. I mean, people are like, oh, my soup's cold or whatever. And I'm like trying to keep it together. Like, you know, the world around us is crumbling and we're in this little snow globe in Aspen where everything's like fine, you know? Here's the deal is they have a serious concern, a serious problem. And I'm not able to do my job because I'm faking it, you know, and
I'm just
inauthentic about it. So, my time on a course in Aspen with my buddies, you know, best moments of life. And I just decided, like, this is what I need to do. So I started from the ground up, man. I was cleaning clubs at one of the private courses there, Maroon Creek Club, fantastic golf course.
You were in the Cart Barn.
I was in the Cart Barn, man, scrubbing hooks.
Do you watch Cart Barn guys?
I follow Cart Barn guys.
We're going to chill with them on Saturday. I can't wait.
Yeah, yeah, they're funny guys. They're pretty cool. I don't know them, but they seem pretty cool. Actually, one of the best Cart Barn tricks of all time. Do I have time to share this?
Of course.
It's fantastic.
We have all the time in the world.
So we had the Easy Go carts, and they've got the little like wallet basket up top. And, you know, to bring the carts down in the garage, you've got this little ramp that goes down, and we just kind of stage carts, and whoever was free would run them down. And we'd always unscrew like a water bottle and put it up there. So when the guy gets in the cart and hits the gas, the water just hammers him, right? And it's every single time, it's classic. And one time we're out there and we're standing on the cart staging area, and a member comes walking up and he's like, "Hey man, just want to grab a quick cart. I'm heading out to the range real quick." And we had staged a water bottle up there, and this member gets in goes and hits the gas and just gets smoked with the water, man. And we're just standing there like, "Oh my goodness, who would do that? Who did that?
Who on earth would do that?
Yeah. And we're like, "Geez, okay, enough of that."
Yeah, that's dangerous territory.
Yeah, that is.
Right. I'm not a huge prankster, although I have done a couple pranks. I can't remember the last prank we've done, but that was if anyone listens to this and does that, definitely tag David.
It's a pretty good one, man. You know, the reaction's pretty good.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, you're there, you're cleaning clubs, and you're like, "I want more still."
Yeah, I want more. So I'm cleaning clubs. I caddied a little bit. I would mow some greens here and there. I went and took an internship in Bend, Oregon at the Tethero Golf Club.
I've been in there. I love that place.
Yep, cool place. Great golf course.
Bend is another one of the... You've really kind of lived my dream. I don't know if you realize that, but I always wanted to work at a ski resort, and I've always wanted to live... I mean, I don't know if you consider Bend the middle of nowhere, but it kind of is.
But there's 100,000 people there.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's a really cool town.
Bend is actually really special because from L.A., they have direct flights.
Into... I can't think of the name of the town.
Regional something something.
Yeah, yeah, it's just north of Redmond.
Or something. Redmond. Yeah. It's Redmond, yeah. Yeah, I remember we went to Bend this year, and I went to Bend a long time ago and played Lost Tracks.
Oh, dude, love Lost Tracks. What a great walk that is.
Who designed Lost Tracks?
No idea.
That's fucking awesome, dude.
Yeah, I love Lost
Tracks. I love that.
Absolutely no idea. Yeah.
They've got a train car part three.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's an island part three where you walk through a train car to get to it. That's the bridge.
Over the bridge. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it's a great fact, right? It's one of these courses where you're just like, great course. Yeah. Who cares who designed it?
Yeah, no idea.
You know, because obviously you now, we're going to get to this eventually, but you work with Nicklaus.
Yep.
You spend your life on, you know, the craft of building golf.
Exactly.
And it's cool to know that there's a spot you're just like, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Fun spot.
It never mattered to me, you really, ever. It's like, if you have fun, you know, who cares? I mean.
We'll get to this in a second, but, you know, there's a point at which you play golf, love golf, work in golf, and then all of a sudden, you care about the architect.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's like, that's kind of like, you know.
Well, it's like bucket list kind of deal, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. It's a cult following.
Well, it's kind of like when you transcend human form. You know what I mean? Sure. It's like you become a awakened being.
Yeah.
Well, it's like Andy Johnson says woke.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the woke golf when you start to care about that shit.
Yep. Love Andy's content, by the way.
He's great.
Side note. Yep.
I've loved spending time with him and learning from him and hearing him complain.
Yep. I know. Well, we can touch on that subject in a minute, too. But let me wrap up my story because I'm getting long-winded here.
It's all good. We're only 9 minutes in, dude.
Okay. So it feels like 30.
It does feel longer than it is.
Yeah, it does. All right. So Bend was pretty short-lived because... the rental market is ridiculous there. You just can't rent houses in Bend. I was showing up like with cash in hand, and they were like, "Yeah, that's not really how it works." And they're like, "If you want to buy, like, I can get you in a home today." And I'm like, no, like, yeah. I'm here for a couple months. So doubling back in my hospitality background, I got a job with Kemper Sports Management as first director of sales and marketing for golf memberships at a private club. And eventually assistant general manager.
So you and I know what Kemper is. A lot of people out there have no clue what it is. They manage Bandon, all the Kaiser properties.
Yep.
They own Stream Song.
Yep.
And keep going.
Yeah, so...
I mean, the list goes on. What else does Kemper do?
The list goes on. So, you know, they're a management company, right? So they operate So we all know they're flagship properties, right? But I was at some of these kind of fringe market properties in Westchester, New York, and south of D.C. In those roles. And they're great clubs in their own, but no one's ever heard of them. I mean, Swan Point and Mayapack Golf Club.
Haven't heard of it.
No, exactly. So, but, you know, these are the properties that fill the cup for Kemper Sports.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they...
That's the appetizer at the restaurant where they make all the dough?
Yeah, man. Interesting. So, you know, they basically collect a management fee from these clubs. It's a monthly kind of deal. Mm. I'm sure the number ranges from club to club, depending on volume and whatever it is they do. But, you know, I'm there as a Kemper representative managing the day-to-day operations of these clubs. And it's an interesting dynamic where you're employed by Kemper Sports, but you are at Mayapack Golf and Beach Club or wherever. And the membership or the board of directors, they come to you as an employee of their club, right? And there's this kind of this balance where you have to keep the Kemper people happy and keep your members happy at the same time.
Right.
It's pretty interesting. So anyway, at the time I'm back in school earning another degree in agronomy.
Why?
Because that's a great question, man. Still answering that.
Because you wanted to be recognized by No Laying Up.
Yeah,
as
well,
the resident agronomist.
Yeah, that's funny. I've written a couple articles for those guys.
Great guys.
Actually, probably some of the best work I've written for them hasn't been published.
Interesting.
Yeah, no fault of theirs. There's been some controversial.
The man's trying to keep you down. Man.
Yeah, no.
No, but, controversy is you know, you got to kind of play careful with that.
Yeah, no, for sure. And my take, you know, my opinion might differ from where the PGA Tour, you know, calls their bread and butter, whatever they're making their money on.
Well, for those listening, David, I'm going to invite you to become as controversial as you'd like
okay.
on the second half of this podcast.
Yeah.
But for now, you make the decision to go to agronomy school and you don't know why.
Well, I knew I wanted to have a life in golf. And at the time, I'm 27, 28 years old, leaving a great industry in hotel management, right? And I'm starting anew, basically. And don't get me wrong, I'm a hard worker. I mean, I put the time in, but I knew that having further education in a field that I was interested in would help push the envelope. So I kept my job with Kemper because it paid me better than as an intern with a ground screw or whatever it
right.
was. So I was making better money. And then when the time came, I, you know, would go out and help with the crew on Saturday or Sunday and kind of, you know, balance that act between school and work. And I finished and got a job as an assistant superintendent at Desert Mountain Club here in Scottsdale. Great facility, 6 Jack Nicklaus courses there. It's unbelievable. I mean, the landscape there is fantastic. So basically I'm at Desert Mountain and Jack has a site visit and he's there with his senior designers at the time, and they're looking for a young guy who's interested in that line of work, and I just met the right people at the right time, and that's how I got to where I am today.
And where is that?
I'm currently a design coordinator with the Nicklaus design team.
What does that even mean?
So I am on site every day with the shapers and with the construction crew. And I basically am responsible for maintaining and implementing the design integrity through the construction process. So I'm on the ground making decisions and problem solving in real time, where my boss, Chris Cochran, who has worked for Nicklaus his entire life.
Whoa.
And he's stellar. I mean,
he in a large part architectural force?
Yes. So,
are you like the foreman kind of?
More or less.
You take the plans and you're responsible for them.
Exactly. So
that's fucking gangster.
So Chris draws it up, and his resume is miles long.
Mm.
So I'm, you know, I'm in incredible hands and I'm learning every day from him. And so he gives me the plans and I go out in the field and you know, I'm with the guys and I'm saying, you know, we need this bunker here, we need these tees here, the green pitches back this way, we're going to roll that front edge of that green that way or what have you, give me a little contour in this fairway over here. And
you're turning me on, bro.
Yeah. So so I'm out there, you know, I'm just out there envisioning the game that I want to see or what I think is cool, and then Cochran will show up and say, I like what you did here, or I don't like what you did there, and we'll kind of revisit it till we get it right. And it's a great role, and I'm excited for the next steps, but this is kind of where I'm cutting my tooth.
So, and when did you start that?
I just got that offer in November.
Whoa, yeah. It's brand new.
Yeah, it's pretty new.
So, that's exciting.
Between Desert Mountain and the deal with Nicholas, I lacked the construction experience. So I went and got a job as an assistant foreman, basically, with a construction company, and we just rebuilt the Phoenician Resort Golf Course. So I spent all last year doing that.
So I get a lot of messages about, like, oh, you know, I want to work in golf. And, I mean, I feel like you've sort of answered in some ways a lot of those questions by explaining your own experience and just kind of, sounds kind of like living in, like, a, you know, just a move towards the light. I mean, that's the cheesiest part. That's the most Oprah way of saying it. But just move towards, like, the availability, right? Like, just doing what you got to do and then just keep sort of reorienting like a sailboat. Kind of like, okay, well, where do I want to go next? Well, I want to go to agronomy school, so to go.
So my biggest fear in life is that an opportunity will present itself and I'll pass on it. And 5 years down the road, I'm going to say, dang, I should have done that when I had the chance. So when I had an opportunity to get in golf, I did, right? And it was cleaning clubs. And how do I further this, right? How do I push this to the next level? Because I'm enjoying what I do and I'm enjoying the environment and the culture I'm surrounded in. The answer, school worked for me, but that's not it. I mean, I grinded. I mean, the Phoenician job last summer, 118 degrees for however long, you know, 75-hour weeks. I mean, there's no escape in the sun. There's no escape in the heat. Like, nearly killed me twice out there. I mean, it's a grind. Like, here's the deal. You can have all the qualifications. You can have all the education. But can you do the work? You know, show up. You know, just be there and work hard. And you create what you want. I mean, that's, I don't know any other way to put it.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. And I see that a lot because it's not, I mean, I don't think of what we do as something that's terribly precious. You know what I mean? Like, it's mostly just that we were in the right place at the right time and we put in the 99%, you know, Woody Allen says, perspiration, 1% yeah. Inspiration. And I mean, you know, it's just like, just get up early.
Yeah.
You know, and you just, and it makes it easier to be inspired by the work.
Yeah.
That definitely helps. But I could imagine cleaning clubs, like, I would just be like, get the fuck away from me. Like, get out of here. I don't care about your fancy whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
But there's a purpose beneath that. And as long as you can put away the, like, I don't want to be here right now thing. And just, like, did you find yourself having a hard time with it? Like, because I read something the other day that was, like, try not complaining for the entire day.
Impossible for me. I mean, I try and have a positive outlook, but in my own head, I'm like, oh, you know, this sucks or that sucks or those people suck. And like for me, the hardest part about getting to the opportunities that I have now and the opportunities that, you know, will come before me is complacency. And
interesting.
Obviously through the conversation you and I just had, I've bounced around a lot. And a lot of that is, I'm spinning my wheels now. Like, what's the next?
Right now?
No, not now. Oh. No, in those other roles, right? So, I've shown up, I've put in the work, and now I'm done learning in this current role. What's next? How do I challenge myself? How do I go out there and continue to learn something new? And that's really what drives me. I mean, I want to be out there and I want to be problem solving and figuring things out and have this cause and effect mindset out in the field where if we put this here, you know, is that going to push water this way? Is that going to, you know, inhibit a sight line or, you know, whatever it might be. So what gets me going is the ability to think and problem solve and create solutions. And that's why I love what I do right now.
A lot of people show up to a golf course and never consider your entire life.
Yeah.
and the hundreds and probably, I don't know, tens, 20s, 30s, thousands, hundreds of thousands of men and women who have really spent their entire lives trying to just make a golf course better.
Yep.
Or, you know, if you're at a resort, right, there are people that are literally spend, you know, 40, 50 hours a week trying to make your experience of that fucking golf trip
yep.
Good.
Yeah, right. I know.
And so interesting. You're like the Fight Club of it all. You're like, I've been in, I've been washing your towels, cleaning your gloves. Yeah. Now I'm shaping your green.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting that we kind of walk through a golf experience, not really realizing that even if you play golf alone, it's still, you still, there's still a lot of people that are involved in your round of golf.
Oh my goodness. It's unbelievable. And shaping a bunker, shaping a green, that's nothing, right? That's the easy side of it. Try installing miles and miles of irrigation pipe and the wire that goes in the ground along with that and the drainage that, you know, the herringbone drainage that's underneath every green you step on.
Hang on. Herringbone drainage? Well, that's, my interest is peaked. Yeah. Tell me everything I need to know about herringbone drainage.
It's the pattern. It's the pattern of the.
It's like a cross. It's like a check pattern?
Yeah, pretty much. There's like a main line coming down the center, right? And then you've got these branches coming off whatever increments might be. I know like Troon has their own specs for greens drainage and bunker drainage, and USGA has their own specs. So it just depends on the client and what they're trying to accomplish.
Ooh, you know what we can talk about? Torrey Pines.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the money.
Okay. You're not going to like my opinion.
I don't give a shit.
Okay.
Your opinion is your opinion.
Yeah.
All I know is I read Andy Johnson said, what was it, a million?
Yeah.
A million for the irrigation alone on Torrey?
Well, it's a $14 million bunker renovation and irrigation renovation project.
And we're talking about a public course.
Yeah.
So taxpayers are paying these dollars.
It's a San Diego City Municipal Golf Course.
Okay. I heard that, and the last thing I did was I met with Keith and Riley, talked about Winter Park.
Yep, awesome
talked about
guys.
Yeah, awesome guys. Talked about how they handled the design as well as the construction.
Yep,
in order to save the municipality potentially 3x.
Right, at least.
At least.
Yeah.
So they turned a $3 million project into a $600,000 project.
Yeah, incredible story.
And then I go hear about Torrey Pines. I'm kind of like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, what? How do they make this mistake? And they're just a bigger, more intelligent, hopefully, version of Winter Park.
Yeah. I mean, I see the comparison that you're making, and you're not wrong in thinking that way. I don't know all the details of the project. I don't know what regulations are involved and what have you. California is expensive. You live there. It's a tricky place. It's not Orlando. Not that Orlando is a cheap place to live, but I imagine the regulations of Torrey Pines Nature Preserve are different than City Center Winter Park. That being said, you've got a bunker crew, you've got an irrigation crew, right? We're talking about La Jolla, California. You've got maybe 40, 50 guys that you have to supply housing for. We're talking a prevailing wage job that I doubt, I'm not sure, I'm speculating that Winter Park is not a prevailing wage.
Interesting.
Place. So
kind of a union thing you're talking?
Right. So we're talking about, you know, an irrigation crew that I have out here might be making $15, $16 an hour. An irrigation crew in a prevailing wage job might be making $40, $45 an hour. I don't know, but it's a lot. And that's why people flock to those jobs when they get them. You know, if you get a guy on your crew who's like, hey, man, prevailing wage job just came about. You're like, all right, call me when you're done because I can't pay you that. You know, you got to go and take that opportunity while it's there. So right. Without looking at their bid proposal, without looking at the documentation that goes along with Torrey Pines, I imagine a lot of that money is being spent off the golf course.
Like where?
Like housing and like hourly wages.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not the cost of pipe is different in Torrey Pines. The cost of sand is not different at Torrey Pines. It's everything else that's the politics that come along with that job.
So are you making excuses? So what do you mean I'm not going to like your opinion? What is your opinion? Is what it is?
I think it just is what it is.
Okay.
And my opinion of the golf course, more work at Torrey Pines isn't gonna make it worse. I think, you know, the course probably leaves a lot of people wanting more with the incredible views that it has to offer. But my opinion of the project is probably that number, it's really not that far off. It's not that crazy when
really
Twitter's blowing up about it or whatever, because it's not the scope of the job itself that makes that number.
Well, I'm glad we talked about it because, you know, I am not, you know, like I'll, I don't go on Twitter very much.
Yeah.
But when I do, I basically follow 8 people.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to see Andy's like rants. And I saw it and I was kind of like, you know, I agree with Andy. Fuck that. And it's like, well, you know, not everybody's right all the time. Yeah. And it's interesting to have another point of view. I'm not going to get Andy on the phone right now.
Yeah. But. Andy's right too. I mean, he's not wrong for thinking that. You know, that cost is mind blowing. I mean, that's a lot of, you know, we could do with $14 million and create a golf freaking complex, a compound with that money. It's unbelievable. But to do what they're doing there, I'm sure every cent of that is accounted for.
Right.
You know, I don't think it's excessive spending to get the job done.
So you've got, you know what, let's go to a quick break. And then when we come back, I want to talk to you about, you know, what we could do with that $14 million, that idea of the future of golf.
Okay.
Stay tuned. All right, folks. You know my favorite golf shoe, don't you? I think you do. It's Three Stripe Life, y'all, and that means Adidas. And so anyway, I just wanted to tell you that when I'm a big fan of the Tour 360, obviously, and they've made a huge update to the Tour 360, and the two letters that it's concerned with are the letters X and T, okay? The Tour 360 XT changes the game, okay? It's lighter, so your feet feel even better after a round. By the way, a light golf shoe is what I'm all about. There are some other companies making heavy golf shoes, and I'm just like, by the way, I weigh enough. There's enough going on. I'm carrying a golf bag. I'm carrying my team. Tour XT changes the game. It's lighter, so your feet feel even better after a round, and it still features that Boost, y'all. Do you know where Boost comes from? And Boost is cool because it only comes in black and white. I don't know if you noticed that. And actually, the guy who made Boost like was going to bring it to some other, you know, they were shopping it around, and everyone else said no. Adidas was like, I'll take that Boost, even though it's only black and white. And what did Adidas do with it? They made it awesome. I'm looking at Boost right now on my feet. Boost on my feet. And it has an X-shaped traction system that gives you insane stability. Literally, it's not sane. It's literally crazy. Your feet will literally be like, I'm crazy. Best part, it comes in spikeless. Ooh, that's tight. The first spikeless ever in the history of the Tour 360. Crazy comfortable and perfect for the course. Get your pair at adidas.com. Thank me later. Follow Adidas Golf for all the latest and greatest. That's all true statements right there. Check it out. Go support Adidas because they're a good company, good people. I like it. So I know you're involved with some interesting projects that are coming up. We can talk about those, but I think also I would just kind of like to hear in general, obviously you now, you know, this morning I was talking to some guys from Golf Channel and we were talking about once you kind of get inside the golf industry, you forget what your perception of the golf industry was like before you were inside.
For sure, man. Yeah.
And they're not the same.
No.
It's impossible for them to be the same. They're not wildly different necessarily, but the view is just different. And and I was trying to remember how I felt about this and that and the future of golf and, you know, a certain tournament before seeing it and meeting the people that put it on and whatever. Or even just, you know, lost tracks. Like, love that course, don't know anything about it. Now, looking back, I'm like, I know so much more about course design. Like, you know, how would I feel about that course now? It'd be interesting to go back. But, you know, when we talk about what the future of golf is going to be like, you know so much now. How do you think that is, you know, do you care? Obviously, you do.
Of course.
How has it changed? How do you see it?
You know,
I hate this question, by the way.
Now yeah. Go. No, agree. And I do too. So thanks for asking it. But, where do I see the future of golf going? I mean, obviously time is an inhibitor, you know, it's a barrier of entry. Obviously cost is a barrier of entry. In the world of immediate gratification, how do you get people to shut their phones off for 4 or 5 hours, right? How do you get people to just turn everything off and go and enjoy being out in nature? Well, I think the answer to that is somehow finding a way to limit the cost, and maybe it's providing, you know, at municipal golf courses, right? Let's say Torrey Pines, okay? Torrey Pines has an offer, you know, for City of San Diego high school students where you can come and play one round a month and we have the clubs for you to go and enjoy. I mean, that's a bad example because they're making so much money on filling every tee sheet every day. But, you know, apply that to Des Moines, Iowa, apply that to fill in the blank, right? And I think, you know, there's got to be some sort of, I don't know if it's a nonprofit organization that ends up growing the game or whatever it is, but someone's got to throw the industry on their shoulders and make the game more accessible to the masses, you know, introduce the game to a lot more people. And I love what Topgolf is doing. I mean, I think that's great. They've nailed it, man. With a hospitality background like myself, I walk in there and I go, these guys nailed it, you know?
Right.
And, you know, my girlfriend loves it. She's not a golfer, but she can go and have a margarita or have a glass of wine and hit balls for hours, you know? And right. It's a great time. We bring her parents. We bring the whole family. And, like, it's great.
You go to the one at Talking Stick?
Yeah, we that's go to Talking one. Stick. Yeah, it's a good one. And I'm not, you know, I'm not recommending the Topgolfization of golf, right? Because golfers like you and me, we need, you know, we need our temple, man. We need a place to go.
I don't really like Topgolf.
Yeah.
It's not that I dislike it. It's just that I would never go.
Yeah. I'd much rather go and play three holes at, you know, wherever I play.
Yeah.
You know, and go and do that.
Topgolf kind of fucks me up because I'm like, I don't want to play a video game.
Yeah.
I don't drink.
Yeah.
I don't really like loud music and I don't like crowds.
Yep.
So, and granted, the only time I've been to Topgolf is like at the PGA show when it's just like everybody everyone's on earth there. Is there. Yeah. But even still, like, I'd rather, you know, we found this little 9-hole pitch and putt in Beverly Fantastic. Hills.
Yeah.
That's where I will go.
I've been to one in Santa Clarita. I can't remember the name of it, but it is awesome, man. And there's like a million rabbits running around the golf course and it's like the coolest experience ever. I mean, you know, the lights are on and it's 9 o'clock at night and you're out hitting wedges and putting around with just rabbits like running under your feet every shot. It's a really cool place.
So someone comes to you and they say, look, you know, I love golf. What should I do?
Yep.
What should I do? What do I need to do?
Yeah. What do I need to do? So, one of the things I'm working on, is basically creating a, community centric, recreational area, right. That has golf around it. In my eyes, it's built around golf, but golf is very small in what that offers. So, you know, for example, you have a concert and events pavilion that maybe does Friday night concert series, and around the clubhouse or the community center, you have a 18-hole putting green where you have a pint and a putt while the concert's going on Friday night or what have you, right?
Is that already trademarked?
No, but we can. You know, I'll go in on that.
Because my mom and dad just heard it, and they might steal the idea.
Yeah, good. Hey, mom and dad, by the way.
My dad's name is David.
Oh, great name.
Yeah,
great. So, you know, another thing I don't have land acquired for this kind of like project I'm working on yet. That's in the works. But, you know, one of the things we're talking about, a town in Connecticut that I grew up in, and implementing this kind of community golf project. And I think this works everywhere. And this is how you get more people into the game. So you have your concert pavilion, you have your Friday night pint and putt, whatever. You have a great practice facility, right? And maybe you got 6, 7, 8, 9 target greens out on the driving range. Those, you know, Friday night while the concert's going on, those target greens become a pitch and putt under the lights, right? And there's music going and you're out there with your kids, you're out there with grandma and grandpa, and everyone's just having fun. The golf course itself, you know, I'm infatuated by this idea of courses inside a course. So with the idea I'm trying to bring to my hometown, basically I'm trying to provide at least a 9-hole facility for like the high school team to go and play and have their events on. But inside that, you got a par 3 tee on every hole. So everyone can play, no force carries kind of deal. On top of that, to tickle my heartstrings, you know, I'm talking about doing hickory tees. So having a hickory course inside the regulation golf course where, you know, you bring the strategy of the golf course within 220 yards off a tee and you basically create a set of hickory tees to play the golf course. And how that works is you got your little sandbox on the tee, right? You tee your ball up on the little sand pile.
This is the way it used to be.
Yep.
It used to be you would... There was a little like cone that you were
given.
Like a
little cup, yeah.
Yeah, and you would basically fill it up with sand and then tip it over, yep. And then you would place the ball on top of it.
Yep, and having the agronomic background I do, I want to give that aesthetic to those tees and maybe even that landing area off the tee where those sections of the golf course are grassed with like 1920s South German bent grass or like what, you know, old world kind of turf types that give that real aesthetic. And you know, that's not how you grow the game, right? But that's like a cool example of some of the things that I'm thinking about. And you know, I think it's got to be more than just golf, right? So you got to get people to your facility, whether that's through a concert series. Being in Connecticut, I want the driving range to also have sledding tubing nights, you know, when you got a storm coming through and you got a little waffle barn set up top, hot cocoa, whatever.
Waffle barn.
Yep. And then cross country ski trails throughout the golf course, what have you, multi-purpose trails in the summer. And you just got to open the doors, man. It's going to have to be more than just golf.
I like everything you said. I disagree with you, though. I think it is how you grow the game of golf.
Sure.
I think, you know, one of the problems that people run into is they don't want to play because they just feel like they're being sold.
Yep.
And for a dollar.
Yep.
Right? Or whatever. And what you're talking about is not really selling. You're talking about story, right? Storytelling. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. What's that? That's a hickory club,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah. No,
this is where
cool.
It all started.
Yep.
Why is it sandy? Oh, that's because that's the way it used to be.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that... you know, I think, you know, we don't give ourselves enough credit for being interested in history, and golf has it.
Yeah.
More than any other sport.
More than any other sport, man.
More than any other sport. Like,
yeah. And I'm a baseball nerd, right?
Yeah.
So I love, you know, the history of the game, but when I got into golf, I was like, dude, home, you know, golf is overwhelming. Like, you can nerd out for hours and hours.
Lifetimes.
And not even scratch the surface of the history of the game.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and also what you're, the thing that when I heard you talk about the, overall project,
yep.
It's the thing I'm hearing over and over is like flexibility.
Yes.
You know, and I don't see that a lot.
No, man. And, you know, so one of the main concepts, obviously land dictates everything. I don't want to like, people that are in the industry are going to hear this and be like, that kid doesn't know what he's talking about. But obviously I know the land dictates everything. So I'm working on that.
Right. How old are you?
31.
Awesome.
Yeah. So the...
And you might not know what you're talking about.
No.
That's cool though.
I might. I'm learning.
It'd be, you know, yeah. Orson Welles made fucking Citizen Kane at like 24.
Yeah, I know.
He DP'd, he did everything.
Yeah.
He didn't know what he was talking about.
Yep.
But he fucking went in, and even though he did things backwards, he made something different.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's really a big part of it changing. Well, so I hope you don't know what you're talking about, because then you might actually do something interesting.
Well, I've never been afraid to put my ideas out there. And,
yeah.
You know, and I'm not a writer, but I love writing, and I love putting it out there, right? And I'm open to all the criticism that comes with it, because you put yourself out there, there's going to be critics.
Yeah.
You just got to stand up to it, man.
I got some haters.
So back to the flexibility thing. You know, I've got a couple parcels of land in mind for this project, and, you know, I'm waiting on some things to come through to acquire those. But basically the idea for the golf is to have three hole loops, right? So you've got various sales categories. You know, I've only got 30 minutes. Cool. We'll go play, you know, loop A or whatever. Go play loop C. You know, and I don't think I want to have 18 holes, but I want to have some multiple of three. So whether that be 9, 12, 15, what have you.
I can't remember the last time I played 18.
Yeah, no, I know.
I just can't.
I play on Sunday with a group. That's about the only time I go and play 18 holes.
Yeah.
But
when I play 18, what do you think when you do play 18?
I'm... like
14th tee box, what are you thinking?
I'm like, I'm done, man. Like,
I'm fucking done.
Yeah, no,
I'm like, done. I love this game, and I'm done.
I love the game, and obviously I spend my life around it, and I love the guys I play with. They're a great crew. But I don't care about the last four holes, man.
Imagine if I was like, let's go bowling for 4 hours. Let's go sit on a plane for 4 hours.
Yeah.
4 hours is too long.
It's too long.
It's too long.
No,
and
no.
I feel like such a dick saying that.
No, you're not, man. I'm an industry guy. I'm supposed to be like, you know, this industry pays my bills. This is how I pay off my student loans. And
by the
I'm
way,
saying we might have something wrong here a little bit, you know.
18 holes at the old course didn't take 4 hours, I'll bet.
No.
In fact, we went to Prestwick. They played 3 rounds in a day. They did 12 holes. They literally played 2, and then they had lunch, and then they came back and played a 3rd round.
Yeah.
And that was the Open.
Yep. That's fantastic.
It was in one day.
Yeah. Open Rota course. Right? Yeah. That's fantastic.
It doesn't make any sense.
No.
We've literally, the saddest part is it's like people are scratching their heads on private jets, wondering why golf doesn't work, and they're just flying right over Scotland.
Yeah.
And they have no fucking clue.
Yep.
They literally can't even look down and look at the kids' course at Gullin, the Himalayas. Well, wait, how long has the Himalayas been in the old course? Is that new?
I don't think so, no.
We don't know. No, but anyway, let's pretend it's 500 years old.
Yeah.
The point is, it's not. But the point is, it's all there.
Yeah, man. And for me, you know, looking at that model, right, and how the game became so popular there, the golf course is a community amenity. It's not a revenue center. You know, they break even, like, great, we had an awesome year, you know, but it's there for the residents of the town. It's there to give them something to do. And that's the idea that I'm trying to push forward, is a community asset, not, you know, some of my companies I mentioned earlier that, you know, that I worked for, I mean, they live and die by spreadsheets and all this. And I'm like, well, you know, grow food and bev, do this and do that. I'm like, you're kind of missing the point. Like, we're, you know, we're managing a golf course. Like, you know, let's open the doors. You're worried about selling more cheeseburgers? Like, no, like, let's get more people on the golf course. You know, let's find a way to make this more interesting or more fun for everyone else out there. And, you know, you look at Torrey Pines model, $14 million, like no one has that money to go and do a new project, right? That's crazy. A project I'm thinking about is like, you know, scruffy edges, but interesting contour and fun, you know, a fun challenge, and like maybe single row irrigation down the fairway, not miles and miles of laterals pulled across every fairway of every hole. And, you know, you water your greens, you know, pull a hose if you have to. You got spots drying up out there, that's fine. Put some quick coupler heads out there and pull a hose, man. You know, right. It just doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be Torrey Pines everywhere.
It's so interesting. You know, there's been a handful of times where my mind has been blown on the pod. And I think that this was one of them, you know, the idea that, you know, the old course, for example, the idea of it not being a revenue center, but being a community amenity.
Yeah.
Like, we have completely forgotten that. And I'm really excited to share, you'll dig it when we do air it, is the Craig Kessler episode. So he's the head of the SCGA. And he was like, look, how much does a baseball diamond make in the town? How much does a soccer field make?
Right.
Well, why does a golf course have to make all this money?
Right.
Shouldn't it just break even?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, these municipal courses or whatever, or, you know, and then you transition out into this weird kind of gray area of public courses that are privately owned. Like, I mean, that's fine. It's great. It's great. You know, we were at TPC Scottsdale, you know, and it's kind of, this is an interesting thing. I actually thought about this last night. We were driving down the fifth fairway of TPC Scottsdale, and we're looking around, and I'm just like, man, this place is perfect.
Yeah.
Every part of it.
Yeah, they nailed it here, man.
How many different mowing levels do they have here?
Yeah,
like 7, 8?
It's crazy. I mean, yeah. I mean, you got dormant rough, you got step cut, intermediate height, you got fairway, you got tees, approach, greens. I mean, it never ends, man.
It's gangster, you know?
It never ends.
But it reminded me of this idea of the way we experience the world online.
Yeah.
And the Jenners, for example, or Kylie Jenner, right? Like, sure. She is not real.
Right.
Is she?
No.
She's retouched. Like, yeah. And both, like, physically.
Yeah.
Surgically,
yeah.
But also retouched on the computer screen.
Yeah, the image we perceive is not reality.
And that's kind of like TPC's concept. It's, yes, like all of a sudden we think every course should be like that?
No, man, no. So let me tell you something real quick. So heading back to the No Laying Up guys, they released an article that I did for them leading up to the Open Championship last year at Carnoustie. I reached out to the head greenskeeper of Carnoustie, shout out Craig Both, great guy, answered all my questions immediately. One of the questions I ask is, you know, what fertilizers, what chemicals are you spraying, you know, pre-tournament, right? What's going on the ground, you know, before the tour comes in or before the event comes in? And he's like, nothing. You know, like nothing, you know, and I'm like, you know, in my head, I'm like, this guy's about to host the Open Championship. He's not putting anything down. So I ask, like, you know, what's your day going to look like, you know, during the event? What's your crew going to do? Like, what's your schedule look like? And he's like, well, nothing's really growing. So like we might mow Thursday and like, like we might mow like Saturday night, you know? And I'm like, my mind's blown, man. Like, I've worked member guest events at private clubs where their maintenance crew of 13 guys is there all day, and they go out twice a day mowing fairways for like your weekend member guest, you know. And here's a guy over in Scotland hosting the Open Championship. He hasn't sprayed anything other than, you know, some water on the greens. I mean, it's unbelievable.
What does that tell you?
It tells you that, you know, there's a serious disconnect in golfers' expectations and and what we require of you know, of our golf courses to have. And I've dubbed it as Masters Syndrome, and Masters is my favorite event of the whole year. I love it, man. And what a spectacle of agronomic science that place is. It's like, it's unbelievable what they do, and they keep it secretive, which is crazy. But you know, we turn it on every April, and then you go out to your club, or you know, I always said the Monday after the Masters is superintendent's busiest day, because his inbox is filled with green committee chairs or you know, guests or members or, you know, just golfers saying, you know, what do we have to do to get that? And it's like, you know, it's crazy, man. That works there. Like, we don't need to apply that everywhere else. Like, buy into the RNA model where they let their environmental environment dictate what they do to their golf course. You know, they're not manicuring their golf course to meet expectations. This is what nature has given us, and this is how it's going to be. And, you know, we're hosting the Open Championship this week.
Yeah, from the origin of the golf course, from the placement of bunkers on some level.
Yeah, yes.
And, you know, then you look at, you know, Carnoustie got a lot of shit for the color of the grass.
It was fantastic.
People cared.
Dude, I bet if you talk to those players, they would say those fairways were divine. I mean, the crunch that they get compressing the ball off that stuff is unbelievable, man. You know, and we've never seen that here in the States, grass like that. And it looks dead. It's not. It's fine. It's just checked out. Give a little water. That'll green right up. No problem. It's totally fine. And, you know, for them, it's great. And I think, you know, a problem here we see with, you know, we'll call it like the U.S. Open is we manage our golf courses to reflect a score that we want to see. And when nature turns on you a little bit, you can lose control of it. And the way the RNA model where nature dictates how they manage their golf course, you'll never have to like shut down play unless there's, you know, 40-mile-an-hour winds.
Right. That's so exciting, man. Yeah. I love hearing all that stuff. I remember I talked to Pete Dye a while ago, and he was like, I don't know if you ever got a chance to talk to him. I should send you our interview.
Yeah.
We talked for an hour, and, you know, this was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously he's not quite as with it now.
Yeah, yeah.
Which Big fan. Sad to hear.
Yeah.
But he talked on and on about how he's like, you know, he's like, I'm just fascinated by the agronomy of it all. That's what I really love.
Yep.
And he talked about green speed.
Yep.
And he had a big, do you know his opinion on green speed?
I don't, but
he's like, they're too fast.
For sure.
Why on earth would we set ourselves up to basically, your description of the mowers that the member guessed, it's like, what a waste.
Yeah, totally.
But, I mean, sure, you're creating jobs, but like at the same time, it's like, you know, you're making the golf more expensive. You're making it take longer because the player is like in a 3-putt. But he's like, you know, they should be just slow them down. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, I grew up, you know, right down the road, we've got the course at Yale. Mm. Fantastic, you know, golden age golf course, Rainer McDonald, just unbelievable spectacle of engineering. And the greens are so heavily contoured. The features there are so strong on that golf course. And if you had greens rolling north of 12 there, I mean, no one would ever get the ball in the hole.
Right.
You know, and like that's, you know, they manage their course to reflect their environment. And they have to, you know, that's what they're given.
So, but how does that go back to the idea that, so is TV the problem kind of like, cause we see something on TV and then we want to remulate it, or is it the problem within us?
I think it's our expectations. I don't think TV is the problem. The Masters is going to happen and they should televise it. Right. It's, you know, we need to kind of check ourselves and see where we're at in the world. You know, we're not here in Scottsdale. We're not capable of giving Augusta conditioning. I mean, our environment doesn't allow it, you know? It's like that for almost everywhere. And 99.9% of clubs' budgets don't reflect that. And, you know, in today's world, when you have a management company that's running budgets and crunching numbers of your golf course, the first place they pull money from is the maintenance budget.
Really?
Every time. Yeah. Every time. Do more with less. And that's a problem. And, you know, a big problem is the labor that superintendents have. And the guys are great. Don't get me wrong. The crew is fantastic. Every crew guy who has a golf course maintenance job loves what they do, for sure. But the industry standard is that, you know, you work 6 days a week and hopefully you get your 40 hours, but you still got to show up at 5 a.m. 6 days a week. You're going to make $11.50, $12 an hour. And right down the road, Burger King is offering $13 an hour, 5 days a week in a controlled environment. So there's a serious, like, you know, problem attracting qualified labor that these golf courses have. I went a little off the rails there.
I'm just thinking. That's difficult.
Yeah, no,
it's sort of sucks.
Yeah, it's really tough, man. You know, getting guys, it used to be, you know, before my time, I'm probably last of a dying breed where I got into it so I could play free golf, you know? I mean, that's, you know, that's why I did that. I don't think, I mean, that doesn't happen anymore. You know, the guys
on... people aren't allowed to play golf anymore.
No, people are allowed to play golf. You just don't have the guys that were willing to do that work, you know, to go and play for free. I mean, you're calling temp agencies just to get warm breathing bodies through the door, you know, give them a backpack blower and go blow leaves or like whatever.
Well, it's so interesting because, I mean, it's sort of strange because if you look at a golf course, the role that someone with a sharp tool can play and potentially create damage on, like, yeah. You see it, you're like, yeah. Whoa, what were they doing there?
Yeah, yeah, right.
Like, with a huge line across a hill, yeah. And you're like, what?
Yeah, forgot to turn the mower around there real quick, you know, take a chunk out of the collar.
What's on your like bucket list for golf? What do you want? What are you looking for?
Well, you know, obviously the next role will be design associate, which will be really cool. Because then I, you know, what I do now is great, right? Like, I'm given a set of plans and we're out there and we make it happen, right? We see issues with drainage installation or what have you, and I'm out there problem solving. I'm giving the shapers the, you know, the image that I want to see for tees and bunkers and what have you, but we're still building. My boss agrees to his plan, right? And something comes up, I can call an audible, that's fine. But the next role, you know, I'll be doing the layout, right? I'll be overseeing the whole project, and I can really kind of leave my imprint on, you know, on a set of plans and what I want to do. And, you know, that'll be fantastic. And what's really cool, about the Nicklaus company is a lot of the guys in the office there who have built the business, you know, they're probably in the next decade or so looking for the next chapter of their lives. And, it'll be up to new guys like me to kind of carry Jack's torch, you know, and carry my boss Chris Cochran's torch and keep it moving, you know, and that's really awesome. I mean, my phone's not going to ring because Dave Marcuselli is the guy there. My phone's going to ring because I'm in Jack's office, you know, and that's really cool.
You know, Jack once, I heard one of his quotes about architecture, and he explained that would be, in some sense, the courses that he works on and builds is like his legacy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've ever had a chance to, you know, learn more about that from him or anything. Or
I might actually have the quote on my phone.
Oh, yeah. Screensaver, maybe?
No. Anyway, we'll get to it. But, yeah, so Jack, you know, he says it's his full expression, right, when he gets to design a golf course. He fully gets to express himself and what he sees fit for the landscape. You know, there are modern day architecture critics will say that business model might be antiquated, where Jack has like a firm, you know, there's an office of guys where the new guys like Keith and Riley are out there in the field every single day. Right. And I don't think the model's like broken or antiquated. I think, you know, it's great. And Jack was able to do this. I mean, he's built hundreds of courses all over the globe, you know, across the globe. They've held like 400, you know, championship events on Nicklaus courses across the globe. I mean, that's staggering, you know. Name another person in the industry that can say that.
Well, yeah. Yeah. That's a really good point. Yeah. They should factor that into the Tiger Jack question.
Yeah, no, I know, right, you know? Exactly. Like, well, give Tiger some time. He's on some cool projects here, too.
What about in Chicago? Tell us about that.
Yeah, Tiger's got a great project going on there in Chicago. You need any help, Tiger, let me know. yeah, they're redoing, I can't remember the name of the park, but it's basically was two golf courses, I think a total of 27 holes, perhaps, that... they're taken back to 18 on the choice piece of land. We might have to fact check this when I'm done, but
we'll switch gears.
Yeah, yeah.
When you think about golf, you know, you've probably read a lot, heard a lot, seen a lot. What stands out to you is one of the most important kind of perspectives on the game that you kind of think about from time to time?
Yeah, great question. And I think the most important thing is, if it's not Ben and Jerry, right? They said it best. If it's not fun, why do it? And I think for golf, whether working or playing or whatever it is, right? If it's not fun, like it's a hobby, man. It's a game, right? This should be fun. If I can't think of any words while I'm playing Scrabble, like that's not fun, and I'm done. And I think, you know, golf needs that. I mean, if you're not having any fun, like, you know, tennis is pretty cool too. Like maybe go try tennis. But it needs to be fun. And I think as someone who's, you know, going to have a future creating a place where an arena where people go and play golf, I put a burden on myself to make it fun and to make it accessible and to reduce maintenance costs through intelligent design, because like you reduce the cost of maintenance and your green fees go down and it's more accessible to more people. And, you just need to enjoy it, man. That's it. Number one rule.
I love that you brought in Ben and Jerry's into this interview. Yeah, that was huge.
Yeah, underground. I went to Vermont, the factory. So yeah, Waterbury, Vermont, great place.
Man. I went to boarding school in New Hampshire.
Did you? Cool. Yeah, so. Love New Hampshire. Granite State.
Yeah, it's a good state. It's a good state. I haven't played golf there yet.
I don't know if I have either. I played a bunch in Vermont. But,
yeah. Awesome, dude. Well, thanks for joining me.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Check out Dave's information down below. Put your cell phone down there if you want to get at him.
Sure.
All right, thanks, man. Take care.
All right, bud.